You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to Table Talk, a guide to the future of food and nutrition, brought to you by Food Matters. And this episode is made in association with Olam Food Ingredients, now known as OFI, as part of a whole new brand identity. In these podcasts, we chat with visionaries from across the food industry to discover the ideas that will transform our food landscape. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, I'm a TV presenter, and I'm a gastronaut. Now, this episode is all about people power. We're going to ask, how can we encourage customers and consumers to use their spending power to create a better food system? And are there some intriguing ways to go about it? One company putting those questions high on their agenda is the ingredients company Olam Food Ingredients. Now, these are huge questions, but the solutions can be really fascinating. If you want to know how cashew apples can be turned into beautiful burgers, or how the millions of tons of waste from coffee cherries can be made into nutrient-rich drinks, keep listening. You're going to love this conversation. OFI are a huge player in global supply chains, perfect people to talk to about consumers and sustainability. And I'm joined by Kamesh Elajosula, Chief Innovation and Quality Officer, Olam Food Ingredients. Welcome, Kamesh.
Thank you, Steph. Thank you for inviting me on your show. Really appreciate it.
It's great to have you. Now, Olam Food Ingredients, one of the world's largest in the sector. Can you give me an idea of what OFI does? What's its scale and what's your role within it?
So let me first start with the company. Olam Food Ingredients is a new operating group that was born out of Olam International. We basically are focused on sustainable, natural, value-added food products and ingredients, so consumers can really enjoy healthy and indulgent products that they love. So we have primarily five product groups: cocoa, coffee, edible nuts, spices, and dairy. And what's really unique about us is we start at the farm gate and track those foods all the way from the farm gate till it reaches the consumer's plate. And that's what is exciting about the way we are set up. And in this process, we do a variety of different things. We work as plant scientists to improve output on the farm. We work as economists. We work as bankers. We do so many different things to improve producer welfare. Then we work with our customers, who are usually companies that are converting these ingredients into various food products, and co-create solutions that anticipate and meet these changing consumer needs. And I'm hoping we'll be talking a lot about that today, to increase and deliver healthier food that's fully traceable and sustainable. So just to give you a little bit of sense of what all this means is that, just if you've consumed a chocolate bar recently, probably one in three that are consumed around the world would be made with beans that we would have handled.
That's absolutely extraordinary, isn't it?
My role is really to do two things, right? One is, how do we, drive innovation throughout this organization? How do we build capabilities which will allow us to create exciting new food ingredients for tomorrow, and also help our customers to create outstanding foods that are healthy, nutritious, and fully sustainable, traceable today? And the other bit is protecting, food safety, quality and food safety for the supply chain. So that's exactly what I do.
Fantastic. Okay. Now, today we're talking specifically about sustainability, and it's a subject that's become more and more important. There are huge challenges the world's facing. I think we all know about that. But in the past, I would say that customers and consumers haven't been particularly interested in it. It's been a sort of a nice additional bit. Do you think that's changed? And how important do you think sustainability is to consumers now?
I think we are at the confluence of a set of perfect storms, not just one, multiple. One is consumers are becoming increasingly aware that there is climate change. It's real. It's impacting them in a lot of different ways. They're also aware that, there's visible signs of it. It's showing up in so many different ways. The other thing we're finding is younger consumers, like millennials, etc., are acutely conscious of this across the world. And, there's a lot of surveys that, point anywhere from 25 to 50% of the millennials showing significant cognizance of climate change. Food brands are being asked increasingly by consumers, the consumer activists, and a whole bunch of stakeholders, that what are you doing about it? you know, how is the food that you put on my table, how is it impacting, whether it's climate, whether it's producer welfare, societal changes, etc. And the third bit, which I think is equally interesting, is it's a big boardroom conversation as well, because
yes, absolutely,
investors, you know, we see a lot of ESG investors nowadays. And, you know, there's estimates that at least 25% of the capital that's available currently in the next few years is going to be locked up for ESG companies only. Mm. So I think that's what I call as a confluence of perfect storms, right? So that's all driving this change.
So the consumer end, you've got people more aware of it, more concerned with it, and companies wanting to do better. But what about if we take this all the way back to the source of the food, the people that are growing the ingredients? What does sustainability mean at that end of the change? We're talking about the farmers and the producers.
So for us, sustainability really has three parts to it. It's about welfare of the producer or the farmer. It's about the planet and the well-being of the planet. And it's about the consumer, the welfare of the consumer. Whether you talk about the consumer or you go to the other side of the supply chain, which you're asking about, the welfare of the planet would be a pervasive priority throughout the supply chain, right? So you're thinking about it every step of the way. Hmm. But at the other end of the supply chain is the producer, is the farmer, right? You know, the farmer communities who are creating the foods that we consume today. So we source from them. We source from across the world in a lot of different environments. And so what are the things that we care about in this? We care about providing economic opportunity, you know, improving nutrition, health, things like healthy soils. You know, all of these are interconnected, as you would expect, improving education and skills. All of these we think are integral to nurturing these producer communities. And I think consumers can make choices that allow these producer communities to thrive, right? They can vote with their wallet by the brands they go after and you know, the ones that, you know, that they use to put food on their table. And here's one point I would probably bring about is this concept of big rocks. Big rocks is used to talk about how you need to, you know, first work on the most important things in your life, and then you can accommodate other less important things, which are usually sand and things that are being put in the jar. So if you just apply that concept to foods and product development, you know, the big rock for me, putting the big rocks in, would be to put sustainable ingredients. So when you want to formulate a product and you want to, you know, put food on the table, make sure to reach out and pick up food, sustainable ingredients. Then it just becomes so much more easier than to sort out all those elements we talked about, producer welfare and, you know, being good for the planet, etc. So to me, if that can be linked back to something that's traceable and verifiable, suddenly you have a brand that consumers can believe in. They can trust that, you know, I can make those choices and that has measurable impact.
So in terms of the different projects that you know about and that you've worked on, what drew you to OFI and the food ingredient sector?
I wanted to give you a sense of how some of this can work out, right? So let's take child labor, right? None of us would want to consume a food which had involved small children, you know, working hard, laboring hard, toiling hard, right? So something that I enjoyed understanding the model that a team in Guatemala did is that they were trying to figure out how to solve for this. They said, look, the reason there's so much child labor is because schools tend to be closed during harvest season, right? So the kids are not in school and they're coming along with their parents and they end up kind of working on the plantation. So they gave this idea of nurseries and schools. And so you brought your kids along and you put them in the school and then you went to work. Modern day daycare, right? But except it started accomplishing some additional elements of outcomes, which we were presently surprised. The kids got good nutrition because you were building meals into that school, which the kids got. So you were building nutrition into that, right? Then you also got employment because you needed teachers to run those schools. So you were able to productively engage people in that community who could teach. And then you did end up with one problem, though, in the afternoon, because once the school was over and the parents came to collect the kids, they refused to go home because they enjoyed that school so much. Right? But you know, so these are examples where, you know, you could create all kinds of review mechanisms and audits and put 10 inspectors on the job, or you could systemically solve it. And that's the kind of stuff that excites me about what we do at OFI.
And what's interesting as well is that the you wouldn't call child labour a sustainability issue, but there is an interconnectedness with all of these things, with health and employment and all these things, which creates something which is sustainability as a bigger whole, really. And that's I think that's really exciting. But for you, since you came into the business, what changes have you noticed in terms of sustainability, both in the concept of it and in terms of what you do?
Well, I've been with Olam a little over 10 years now, and my initial years were not on the ingredients side. I was actually involved in a consumer foods business that was focused on creating food products for African consumers. And having had exposure and doing product development in the Americas and different parts of Asia, etc., this was a big challenge for me because we were formulating and trying to achieve very low formulary cost targets. And yet we were trying to attain modern standards of food safety and nutrition and whatnot. There's a lot to pack into the product in terms of features, but on a shoestring budget, right? So that's when I kind of realized that, that a lot of this revolves around what these communities have in terms of monies, right? You can only feed yourself with the incomes that you have. And when I got the chance to work on the ingredient side, I jumped at that opportunity because, truly, I think that's an area we can impact the other side of this equation. So you could make do and offer solutions with limited budgets, but you could expand that budget by improving farmer income, by improving the kind of welfare that's available in these communities, right? And that's what's really exciting. I think we have an incredible opportunity where we could impact livelihoods of farmers and producers, take their ingredients to customers, and create healthy, nutritious food products that consumers would live. So that's the reason why I jumped on it. In terms of the changes, I think the changes is the appetite and the receptivity has changed a lot. Maybe 10, 15 years ago, everything was really more focused on price. And so it was all about, how do you cut costs and how do you cut everything to the bone, et cetera, which sometimes probably had bad consequences for the producers or even for the environment. Now I think there's a lot more discussion to say, how do we build all this back? How do we ensure fair livelihoods and fair wages are paid? And how do we ensure these communities are better? And we're seeing a lot of customer interest in this space as well. Obviously, there's a lot of consumer interest as well, but customers are also, wanting to partner with us. That's very gratifying.
Yeah. Now, we last spoke to Olam about a year ago about the AtSource platform. And if any listeners don't know, it's Olam's Sustainability Insights platform. And this enables customers to access data on 100 plus economic, social and environmental metrics on the ground with the farming community, which again adds this concept of the interconnectedness of lots of different issues. Now, it was a real eye-opener at the time to look at the fact that this information was being opened up to the consumer. But has the information been helpful in improving standards in the supply chain, do you think?
So the first thing I must admit, I'm very excited about the AtSource platform. Because what it does is it enables food brands to build environment and society-friendly products based on data that's verifiable and traceable, right? Mm. So I think the classical problem we've always had is, companies in their annual reports would share that they've done a variety of things to remediate the harm that's being done to the environment and whatever else. But it's very hard to kind of correlate any of that to very specific products, right? I think what's exciting about the platform is it's digital. You can go and figure out, a given set of product, how that particular product, so these bags of coffee or these bags of nuts, what have they done in terms of environmental carbon footprint? Mm-hmm. And, we are now joining hands with customers, showing how that can be linked. And we have seen a very positive response. A lot of customers are wanting to use AtSource. But more importantly, it's also become a vehicle now to try and drive conversations around change, right? So I'll give you a couple of simple examples. COVID has been really devastating for a lot of our farmer communities, right? So we're able to share and demonstrate the challenges that are being experienced. And we had many of them come back to us and wanting to partner with us and say, what could we do? How can we help? So we've had some exciting things that we've started the journey. Obviously, this is a monumental task So it's not like, you know, one company by itself is going to change everything up. But I think what we are doing is creating very successful models that others could emulate, and a larger part of the industry could look at and say, how can we build on this, or how could we do different things around it? And we are engaging a whole bunch of players, you know, whether it's government, regulators, customers, you know, consumers, in this conversation. And that's probably one of the reasons, Steph, why I'm talking to you today.
Well, the change is really important, and let's think about positive change and food trends and how that all fits into this. On this podcast, we've been talking lots about different alternative ingredients, and there's a real push for alternative ingredients which are more sustainable. Now, what has that meant for your business? Has there been significant change for you because of these issues?
So I think I mentioned to you that I head innovation, and part of that is overseeing 14 innovation centers. OFI, Olam Food Ingredients, has got scattered around the world, right? So at these locations, we create unique products which leverage all our ingredients. And, you know, one of the exciting things that we do is we combine modern science and technology into natural ingredients, right? Retaining their naturalness and creating a variety of solutions. You might have heard of the golden latte or golden milk, which is basically using turmeric or turmeric, however you want to pronounce that, with milk, you know, and it's believed to be naturally in multiple cultures to help protect. There's a lot of modern science that says, you know, it's antibacterial, it supports immunity in multiple ways, right? So here's an example of creating a beverage that leverages spices that we have, combines it with our dairy, creates a product. Another example is using nut plus. So as you can imagine, there's been so much interest in plant-based, variety of reasons. So how do you could potentially replace egg as a binding agent and create a plant-friendly solution, you know? And we're seeing some very interesting build-outs with using our nut plus, which are in examples of, you know, the things that we create. Nut oils are another interesting example. We can create indulgent fillings that replace something like a hydrogenated vegetable fat. You know, hydrogenated vegetable fats, you know, while they're products of modern science, are probably not very healthy, but they're very functional. They do a lot of work for us. So the question is, how do you then achieve that same functionality? We are discovering nut oils are phenomenal output. So you're creating flour on one side, you press out, take that oil, you can use it then too as a replacer. And then, you know, the other thing we've been discovering is you might want to go reach out for a cream biscuit, a biscuit, you know, which is a sandwich with a load of cream in it, and that's usually full of sugar. How do you reduce that sugar? We're finding nut paste could be used to do that. We're finding spices can be impactful in reducing, like cinnamon, for example, cassia can reduce usage of sugar. We're really discovering that in our innovation centers, we can put together a toolkit. It allows you to take these sustainable ingredients, which have done a great job of sustaining and improving welfare of farmer communities that have been easy on the environment, on the planet, and could come and make excellent, healthy, wellness-inspired solutions that are plant-based, on-trend for your consumers.
And coming back to grassroots sustainability, how are these innovations helping to drive real social and environmental impact? You know, you were talking about child labor, but there are lots of different impacts, aren't there?
There are. You know, I'll first start with a favorite topic of mine, ag waste, right? So whenever you produce anything, you are not really taking everything out of the field, out of the farm. Mm. You're creating a lot of waste, right? A classical example, if you think of coffee, we take the bean out, leave the fruit cherry behind, you know, and this is called coffee cherry is called cascara. And this global coffee industry generates 20.8 billion kgs of coffee cherry waste per year.
Wow.
And that's equivalent to 16.6 million metric tons of carbon dioxide, right? So that's tons of planes flying, lots of cars, you know. So that's the impact, right? Now, what if I told you that cherry is actually quite useful? It's not really waste. You can do wonderful things with it. What if I told you that I could convert that into a beverage? It would have a fraction of the caffeine that coffee would have. It would taste very different from coffee. What if I told you that it could be easily incorporated into a variety of foods? It's full of bioactives, polyphenols, you know, it's got tons of potassium, the kind of potassium you'd find in bananas, etc. What if I told you that it's one of the easiest ways to incorporate into baked goods, into beverages and whatnot, and it's fully safe? So those are the kind of examples that I can think of. You grow onions, you know, the onion shoots, they're all thrown away. They're full of flavor. They're full of bioactives, you know. So we believe there's just incredible opportunity in this in terms of grassroots sustainability, right? Another simple example I'll give you is the cashew apple. So, you know, there's a big cashew fruit. Below that hangs the cashew nut. Right.
Which I think so few people actually realize that's how they're grown and why they're quite expensive as well.
They are. And, you know, surprisingly, that fruit is thrown away. It rots. It's a big, you know, disposal problem again. Right. So one of the things we said was, what could we do with those cashew apples? Right. So we brought in Chef Lila Borges Spitzbart. She's a specialist from Brazil who does a lot of work on this, and took her into West Africa, took her into Ghana, and taught these single-holder Ghanaian farmers, all women, how to use those cashew apples. She showed them how to make burgers with them, how to, you know, blend them with pineapple juice and other juices and create nutritious juices, etc. And here, you know, suddenly, you know, so if they bought or used or had some amount of pineapple juice, they could double the quantity by creatively using those cashew apples, which were free. They were just rotting away and wasting away, right? So another probably related example using those the same team, so it's the same group of farmers, is that, you know, their nutrition varies throughout the year based on what how much money they have at any given point of time. So we've partnered with developmental agencies, with companies that teach how to do beekeeping, companies that buy bee wax, companies that buy honey, etc., and taught them how to do beekeeping. What happened was, you know, they had more bees on their farm, so they had better fertilization, better pollination. Their yields went up. They made up to $1,000 more in a year by selling all these different outputs I just described, like wax, you know, honey, etc. You know, and that's what is so exciting about the models that OFI believes in. That you can see transformative change, you can measure it. You have a digital platform like AdSource, which allows you to track and see how that links back ingredients and products.
That's fantastic. I never thought that we'd be talking about cashew apple meat. I think that's a brand new, I've never even heard of it in my life. It's a fantastic story. Now, I guess the consumer is key to all of this. You're supplying ingredients. So how can you cut through to the consumers to encourage them to seek out new tastes, which are also more environmentally friendly? I mean, you know, I'd like to try a cashew apple, but I think a lot of people would be thinking, what the heck? How do you explain to people? How do you make the connection?
I always believe that, you know, consumers can vote with their wallets by the choices that they make. So seek out for brands, for companies that care about the entire supply chain. And, you know, and thankfully today a lot of data is available. And we would like to encourage more and more companies to do this as well. So I've always like dreamed of things like, can I go and get, you know, a bag of nuts, snacking nuts in a supermarket? And there's a QR code on there. I scan it and I know this has come from these wonderful women farmers of Ghana who are doing 10 things to do their farming right. They're using minimal crop protection chemicals. Everything is legal, legit. They're improving their nutrition welfare. And it's from those farms do these cashews come. And, you know, I can verify that as a consumer. So I think it's about building the back end that facilitates all of this. Then it's working with companies that are putting products on supermarket shelves. So that is really the holy grail in my mind. But from a consumer standpoint, I think there is a lot of data available still. And, you know, if they're willing to search and look out, and there's great ways to participate in this, because more and more companies are beginning to notice and do something about it.
And if the information is there, then they'll start using it.
Absolutely. So if you had a choice between two products, more or less same price, and one you knew had done a lot of good for the planet, a lot of good for the producer, and it was personally good for you because of the way it was formulated, versus something else where you have no evidence of any of that and probably has got potentially, you know, things that are not particularly good for your health, right? which one would you choose? You know, it's almost a no-brainer.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I know, Kamesh, that you're a bit of a tech nerd. Clues in your job title, Chief Innovation and Quality Officer at Olam Food Ingredients. So of all the innovations out there, which is the one that you find most exciting? Which is going to be a real game changer in terms of sustainability?
You know, the human mind is constantly coming up with brilliant new ways of solving problems. There are going to be a lot more tools available in the future that probably we can't even imagine today, right? But the single most disruptive thing I'm seeing today is the confluence that I started out describing, where the consumer awareness and understanding is dramatically increasing about the importance of planet producer consumer welfare. I think the awareness that's building around in the investor communities around ESG and the tremendous pressure, et cetera, that's being witnessed from the various regulatory bodies around us. I think this is that perfect storm that's going to fuel the change. I think the innovation that's going to spring out as these things come around and as podcasts and media groups like yourself start sharing this information, socializing it, I think we'll be seeing dramatic changes in the way people choose. And that is going to lead to a very big difference. And I'm hoping companies like Olam Food Ingredients can provide a toolkit with our innovation centers, with our on-hand, you know, on-the-ground work that we do with farmers, et cetera, and the digital platforms like AdSource, which provide you full verifiability, traceability. I think we can drive transformation. So this is enabled by the set of circumstances I just described.
Kamesh Ella-Josula, thank you so much for talking to me.
Okay.
You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast brought to you by Food Matters, and this episode has been made in partnership with Olam Food Ingredients, now known as OFI, as part of a whole new brand identity. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from food waste to vertical farming. Recent highlights include editions on food labeling and insect protein. Follow to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatterslive.com. Thank you so much for listening.